Chapter 11. The Hall of Triumphs. It was called the Hall of Triumphs. As far as Dacius could tell, it was on account of the various threadbare tapestries and fainted banners depicting the battles of Pharadum and its greatly diminished army. Whoever the artist had been, he or she, had a gift for the fatalistic. Every piece described a desperate last stand or a glorious charge into the boneswine hordes. Several depicted the Baron himself, or what might possibly have been his father. It was difficult to ascertain genealogy based on a crudely rendered painting on cloth. In contrast to the beleaguered army, the Baron, or Barons, were triumphant, often drawn with a foot on the head of an enemy, with sword aloft, or at the head of a glittering war host, armour shimmering in the painted sun. It smacked of vainglory and delusion, if the current state of affairs was any measure. The entire company of the Knights of Macragge had been gathered for an audience with the Baron, who had yet to occupy the empty golden throne, sitting at the summit of a raised stone dais at the back of the room. Here, too, was the largest and most expansive tapestry, a huge curtain of cloth that had painted upon it an effigy of the Baron as a towering, deific figure, who blessed his diminutive subjects with an outstretched hand. In this rendering, he had the raiment of a priest-king, a staff and not a sword in his hand.
I do not think I am going to approve of the potentate of this land, muttered Dacius, earning a look of agreement from his captain.
Videa had been invited to the gathering too, at Sicarius's request, and she stood at the head of the ultramarines, hands clasped over her stomach as she waited patiently. She was surrounded by warriors in chipped blue ceramite, their long cloaks brushed and cleaned, but still carrying the scars of recent battle, like their wearers. Pilium stood a head taller than the others, and occupied the rear guard of their formation. Dacius stood to the left, and one step behind Sicarius, Vandius to the right. Fenian and Vorolanus stood behind them, and so the six were arranged. They, too, were surrounded. Dacius had counted 30 armoured warriors standing silently in alcoves to either side of the hall, which was long and in an obvious state of disrepair. Braziers had been lit and cast their trembling glow upon dark stone and even darker wood. A ragged pelt, stitched and dyed crimson, ran half the length of the hall and ended at the foot of the dais. At the dais itself stood Scarfell, his armour polished, though still dented, his helmet under one arm, and his hand resting easily on the pommel of his sheathed sword. Dacius liked the old campaigner, and admired him for his courage. Much about Scarfell reminded him of himself, and a bond had naturally formed. Behind Scarfell, and to the left of the throne, loomed the largest man of Pharadum Dacius had seen yet. Wearing a cuirass of black plate over a hauberk of chainmail and thick, heavy boots, he came close to the size of an Adeptus Astartes initiate. Considering the man had no visible physical enhancements, it was impressive. He carried a sword to match, a double-handed and broad-bladed weapon that he held downwards, both hands on the pommel. His helm was closed, wide cheek plates and a slitted visor offering little in the way of the man's actual face under all the metal.
"We should recommend this one to the Sons of Dawn," Vandius had remarked under his breath, earning a gruff laugh from Dacius that Videa had silenced with a glare as they made entry to the hall and the giant black-armoured warrior had been revealed.
He had little time for the chronicler, and thought her influence on the suzerain deleterious. Cato had his own mind, Dacius had no doubt about that, but the way she insisted the ultramarines kowtow to the natives sat poorly. Yes, they needed to find the power source, and then have Hephaestus determine a way to get it back to the Emperor's will, assuming the Techmarine was still out in the wild somewhere, but they were warriors, not diplomats. The mantle fell uncomfortably on Dacius's shoulders, and he railed against its burden and how it blunted their efficacy. Still, he had to concede it would not serve them at this point to make enemies of their hosts, particularly in the current situation. Dacius had also noticed archers amongst the guards, though these made a practice of hiding in the vaults above the hall. A deep parapet extruded, largely closed off from view, but he had seen the watchful eyes regarding them through the narrow embrasures, as the Ultramarines had taken up position in front of the throne. And they waited, patiently, quietly, and unmoving, until their host arrived.
"I have never heard of this land, this Macragge," said the Baron, resting languidly on his throne.
He looked young, Sicarius thought, and wore crimson robes with a gold trim that caught the firelight. An ostentatious crown nestled on his brow amongst thick, dark hair that fell almost to his shoulders, though he had no beard to speak of. The sword he wore at his hip looked finely made and scarcely used. He turned to who Sicarius assumed was the vizier, standing below him on the lower step of the dais.
"Have you heard of it, Nehebkau?"
The vizier shook his head, though there was an element of tedious theatre to it, as if it were a conversation played out many times already and repeated here for the stranger's benefit. The vizier was a fat-faced man, dressed in long, lustrous jade robes, with a compass-like amulet hung around his bulging neck. He cultivated a sharp beard that extruded in a point like a dagger from his flabby chin. The rest of his scalp contained beneath a tan leather skullcap. The minor slope of his shoulder, the slightly hunchbacked shape to his bearing, suggested an old leg injury that made Sicarius wonder if the vizier had seen more battles than his liege lord. He appeared unassuming but curious, the look of a keen scholar about him, and he held a simple bronze staff with a sapphire fixed to the end. The Baron looked Sicarius up and down, like a man inspecting a thoroughbred horse. There was a fear there too, though.
"Are you from the south, then?"
"We are, my lord,"
Sicarius replied, and felt Dacius stiffen in anger at the use of the word. They should not be bowing and scraping to these men. They should have declared their presence and the needs of their company. But, diminished as they were, that way held no guarantee of success, and would only have led to death. And there was something else, something Sicarius had felt, but not yet been able to identify. Sicarius would commend Dacius on his resolve later, though he was more concerned about Vedea, who looked tense enough that she would shatter at any moment.
"And we thank you for taking us into your fine city of Faradom."
Vandius bowed his head at that, to better hide the grim smile on his face. The Baron wafted away the flattery like an odour he didn't care to experience.
"A debt is owed to you and your kind," he said,
and leaned over to whisper into the vizier's ear. Sicarius caught every word as clearly as if he had spoken them aloud.
"Was it the castellan's notion to bring them here, stinking and dressed like beggar knights?"
His jaw tensed, but he thought of poor Vedea and kept his composure. He gave the shallowest shake of the head to Dacius, who mouthed,
"Our kind!"
It was fortunate he had not heard the rest of what the Baron had said.
"Our castellan, Scarfell, has vouched for you, and spoken warmly of your valour."
He glanced at Scarfell, who sketched a short, simple bow.
"He tells us of how you turned the tide against our aggressors. He also states that you claim the beasts will return, and that you might yet rid us of their plague."
"I would recommend hunting them down and slaying them,"
said Sicarius, his eyes straying to the vizier, who gave nothing of his thoughts away.
"They have suffered a defeat, but they will lick their wounds, gather a larger force, and return. We should attack them in their lair before that happens. Your castellan mentioned a gorge."
"Yes, the gorge,"
replied the Baron, almost dismissive.
"We took warriors to the gorge, an army of them."
He gestured around the room. Sicarius noticed Scarfell's expression darken at the memory.
"This is what remains. Most did not return. We would be foolish to attack again. No, we must refortify the city walls and hold the bone swine off until they tire of battering impotently at stone and wander off."
"With respect,"
began Dacius as he stepped forwards, though he actually meant the opposite. The hulk in the black warplate stirred, but an amused glance and a wag of the finger from the Baron put his dog to heel again.
Orcs do not just wander off. Now they know you are...
Orcs? Asked the Baron, interrupting and momentarily perplexed, until his frown smoothed to a smile.
Ah, you mean the bone swine, yes? Carry on, carry on.
Decius gritted his teeth, prompting a surreptitious calming gesture from Sicarius that thankfully went unseen by the Baron, though he thought he caught the slightest reaction from the vizier.
They do not wander off,
Decius concluded firmly.
They know you are here, and will not be satisfied or deterred until they have breached your walls and killed or eaten everyone within. Orcs do four things really well, said Decius,
counting them off on his gauntleted fingers.
Eat, fight, shit, and make a mess. Those last two are usually connected. I would wish none of them upon your city.
All very well, but what are we to do? Asked the Baron. Or are you hard of hearing as well as half-blind southerner?
Decius is one of my sword brethren, Sicarius quickly interceded, before words were spoken or deeds done that could not be said or undone.
And speaks the truth. You cannot defeat the orcs alone, but you are not alone.
Sicarius opened his arms in an expansive gesture indicating his warriors.
Allow us to fight them on your behalf.
The Baron's eyes narrowed. The prospect of ridding himself of the orcs, evidently intriguing, presumably as well as the fact that he had an aversion to all four of the evils Decius had mentioned. Sicarius found he did not like the conspiratorial look there.
What do you propose?
Sicarius called forwards Varolenus, who came to stand beside him.
Scipio is our finest scout, he and Vandius.
He nodded to the lion, who remained as impassive as a statue throughout the exchange.
We'll venture to the gorge and gauge the strength of the enemy, their numbers and disposition. From this, I will devise a strategy to destroy them, all of them.
Bold,
remarked the Baron, stifling a yawn, but it was feigned. He was more interested and desperate for the knight's help than he let on.
You could do that, he asked. Kill them all?
Sicarius nodded slowly.
We only need a guide to take us to the gorge.
At this, Scarfell stepped up.
I would gladly do it, my liege,
he told the Baron, but with a comradely look to Sicarius. The Baron frowned, as if bored, then shrugged, as if it were a matter of little import.
Very well. See it done, Castellan. Take these knights to the gorge and have them make their plans. What then for the rest of your men? He said,
a sneer still clinging to his face, despite attempts to conceal it.
We fortify the city, help rebuild the walls, said Sicarius,
a fiery glint in his eye that saw the Baron shrink a little in his pampered arrogance.
We make ready for war, as we have always done.
The Baron nodded, slowly at first, but then with greater vigour, as if suddenly warming to everything that had been discussed. He turned to his vizier, who continued to look studious and unaffected.
These men from the south, Nehepkau, do they have the means to accomplish all of this?
The vizier watched them keenly, his deeply sunken eyes unblinking as they met Sicarius's.
Yes, my liege, I believe they do.